We've produced a new CD of two sermons preached by Pastor Todd Wilkin, one for Lent and one for Easter. And we'll send you this new CD for any size donation during the season of Lent. You can donate online, issuesetc.org, or by check, Lutheran Public Radio, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. And for any size gift between now and April 12th, we'll send you a CD of one of Todd's Lent and Easter sermons.
We will restore science to its rightful place and wield technology's wonders.
The gospel is not only the message that the church takes to the world, the gospel is the source of the church's very existence.
People have the attention span of hummingbirds on cocaine. It's got to feel good right now. And to some degree, that's the way we also think about church.
Southern Illinois truck drivers, love issues, etc.
Well, I used to watch a lot more than I do now. Time is kind of short. I used to watch a lot of movies. I love watching movies all by myself in the theater. Christians try and make movies, and it's sometimes really awkward, isn't it? We're going to be talking with Terry Mattingly here in the first part of this hour of Issues, Etc. about movies and spirituality and spiritual care for pastors a little bit later. Greetings and welcome to Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin, and thanks for tuning us in. After a conversation with Terry Mattingly, we'll talk with Colleen Carroll Campbell about the new survey on American religious life. We'll talk with Wesley Smith, responding to a St. Louis Post-Dispatch editorial about President Obama's funding for embryonic stem cell research. And that'll round off this hour of Issues, Etc. Our call-in number for the next hour, 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MYIE. And our in-studio email address is talkback@issuesetc.org. It's Thursday, March the 12th. Earlier this afternoon, I had an opportunity to talk with Terry Mattingly, director of the Washington Journalism Center at the Council for Christian Colleges and Universities, author of the book Pop Goes Religion, and author of a weekly column on religion for the Scripps Howard News Service. I began by asking him, how does film do in communicating the abiding truth of the Christian faith?
Well, see, now there's your problem. The problem is that film does a tremendous job of communicating emotion and feeling and story, right? I mean, you can walk out of a movie just weeping because of the images you've seen and the emotions they have put you through. And of course, there's a lot to be said about storytelling and emotion in religion. Yet the minute you throw a word like truth in there, your problem is that we tend to communicate truth in words, in linear fashion, in a way that you understand what the words are saying very specifically. I mean, how would you film the Nicene Creed, right? Yet you can put very specific truths into forms of words. So film tends to be the kind of thing that supports certain ideas or undercuts certain ideas or makes you feel a certain way. Maybe it can inspire. Obviously, it can inspire. But can it give you specific religious truths? Or is that really something that's more up to interpretation? The old saying, you know, the picture's worth 1,000 words. The problem is that 10 different people could look at the same set of pictures or the same film and come away from the film with a different set of words to define their experience and to define the message they got out of it. So it's a tremendous medium for inspiration. It's a tremendous medium for storytelling. Is it a tremendous medium for the communication of religious truths specifically? Not so much.
Does a film have to come from a Christian film house or from a Christian director or writer in order to do what film can do with respect to religion?
Well, I would say that you at some point, if you want Christian content in there, somewhere in the worldview gate maker role, so you know, of writer, director, it's going to have to come from someplace. At the same time, though, I think, you know, all traditional Christians would agree that truth can come through all forms of art and that all truth is God's truth and that common grace allows certain, you know, messages to be communicated or for us to draw certain truths out of it. Back years ago when I was teaching at Denver Theological Seminary, I used to tell my students that the popular culture was sending us signals all the time about the religious questions and the religious thoughts and feelings of the culture, and that we had to be able to look at that and say, right question, I'm not sure that there's the right answer there. But so, in fact, these days I'd say that it seems like Christians have a unique ability to not make insightful or decent films. There are very few Christians who are doing work worthy of, I mean, or let's put it this way, there are very few church-going traditional Christians who are doing work worthy of much attention. I mean, obviously there are some, but, you know, I once did an interview with the great actor Robert Duvall, who is not a Christian but is very much a faith-haunted man. And Robert Duvall, in this interview, which is in my book, Duvall was just, you could tell, he could not understand why Christians couldn't make great films. As he put it, why can't Christians tell stories about sin and redemption? I do not understand why they can't do that. He said it's very clear that they don't seem to be able to.
See, that's what I find interesting when often when Christians enter into the vocation of film, at whatever level they are, they for some reason feel compelled to make the preachy or the moralistic or even worse yet, kind of the evangelistic film.
Well, there's an old saying that Christian film is terrible, usually terrible for the same reason that Marxist film was terrible, in that you have to make film that contains the doctrines that the party bosses want you to make. And so that secondary to the telling of story or the telling of, you know, of insights into character and character arc and all that other good stuff, secondary to that is whether you contain the right doctrinal messages. So the other old saying, which you could share with your listeners at this point, is that Christian film is usually bad film for the same reason that pornography is bad. It's made on low budgets. There's nobody in it with much talent, and we all know how the story's going to turn out.
I don't know if you're a film goer, but can you give me an example of one that you think hits close to the mark in terms of telling a good story, which film must do, and actually being able to at least resonate with the truth of the Christian faith?
How recent?
Go back as far as you want to, Terry.
Well, I mean, we've just within the last week or so, I mean, you should put something up at your website kind of celebrating his life. We've just recently lost one of the greats of all time, which would be Horton Foote. And Foote, of course, wrote two Academy Award-winning roles that would go down in any list of depictions of Christian truth and faith, in the sense that he wrote Robert Duvall's Academy Award-winning role in Tender Mercies, and he wrote, was it Geraldine Page, who won the Academy Award for the role in a film called Trip to Bountiful. Those are two of the most amazing religious message films ever put on screen. I mean, astonishing stuff. So I would, you know, obviously, to some degree, you had a mixture of believers of various types involved in Chariots of Fire. I think anybody would say that there are religious messages that are in Chariots of Fire. And, you know, we could get into lengthy discussions of other films. Obviously not a believer, but, you know, obviously Jackson left a lot of Tolkien's messages in The Lord of the Rings, which you could say they're not evangelistic, but you'd have to say there's religious symbolism and truth in those films. Then if you looked at films that contained very explicit religious content that wasn't Christian, you'd at the top of that list from the last decade or so, you'd have to say Matrix, you know, was something that the people definitely set out with a theological agenda when they made that film. And there is Christianity all through it. It just happens to be Gnostic Christianity.
Okay.
I mean, so there's all kinds of stuff out there. And of course, some of the greatest filmmakers of all time were people who were wrestling with their religious demons. I mean, everybody from, a believing Catholic like Frank Capra, you know, all the way to a struggling yet still church-going Catholic like Hitchcock. And there's a lot of religious believers who've made a lot of films through the years.
I often find that I am able to glean from almost any genre of film something that resonates with the historic Christian faith. Mm-hmm. Some Christians would say, you know, that's just not enough harvest to wade into the field that is American film with all of its corruption, its sin, its sex, and everything else, what would you say?
Well, first of all, it depends on what your goal is. If people believe in some sort of magic bullet that you're going to make a film that people go to the theater and they watch this film, and at the end of the film they go, "Behold, I should walk the aisle." That isn't what film does. But if you watch enough film from the same director or from the same actor or whatever over time, you begin to kind of soak in their worldview. A lot of the Christian problem with film is that they have this strange syringe evangelism concept. I mean, that you're supposed to make this film that delivers the whole thing. Phil Vischer of the VeggieTales has this wonderful image. He said most Christian popular artists are working with a theory that he calls the magic brick or the Christian brick. And the Christian brick, it's this piece of media is supposed to be so dense with Christian content that you walk up. It has to be dense enough that it meets the approval of the party bosses. Then you walk up to the unbeliever and you hit them in the head with this brick. And to our shock, they don't like it. And even more to our shock, they don't want to pay money to go see it. So that we then get to make another film that is a Christian brick, that we then hit them in the head with it. Like I said, this isn't how film works. I mean, so Christians have got to understand what entertainment does. Entertainment is spread over time, and stalagmite, drip by drip by drip, people take in the worldview of the people that they admire. But Christians don't get to make that many films because the films aren't good enough and nobody wants to pay money to go see them.
Well, when we come back from this break, we'll have more with Terry Mattingly, director of the Washington Journalism Center at the Council for Christian Colleges, author of the book Pop Goes Religion, and author of the column On Religion for the Scripps Howard News Service. More on Christianity and films with Terry Mattingly right after this.
Did you know that you can listen to Issues Etc. 24/7? Check out our website, issuesetc.org, and click On Demand Audio. Listen at the gym, in your kitchen, in your garden, on your iPod, your computer, or in your car. The technology may be new, but the truth never changes. Issues Etc. On Demand Audio, available for your convenience at issuesetc.org. 10 hours of new programming each week, issuesetc.org, and click On Demand Audio.
We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start, the foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes, dedicated customer service, and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. Click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House, listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House, cph.org.
Where Christianity meets culture, you're listening to Issues Etc.
Japan's unplanned problem.
This is a special commentary from the Susan B. Anthony List, named for the suffragette who was proudly pro-life.
We hear a lot in modern society about the problem of unplanned pregnancies, but population control advocates rarely speak of the problems resulting from planning not to have children. Japan, a highly modernized, affluent society, is reaping the results of such planning, and the predictions are bleak. The current birth rate is well below the amount needed to maintain a nation's population. Widespread abortion has resulted in a demographic nightmare for Japan, now the first nation to register more annual deaths than births. This situation threatens to undermine Japan's strength and leave the elderly with inadequate support.
This is Marjorie Dannenfelser, president of the Susan B. Anthony List. To join us in our battle for life, visit our website at sba-list.org.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. It's Thursday afternoon, the 12th of March, in the middle of listening to a conversation earlier today with Terry Mattingly of Scripps Howard News Service, talking about movies and spirituality, and a little bit later, spiritual care for pastors. After our conversation concludes with Terry, Colleen Carol Campbell will be our guest. We'll talk with her about that new survey on American religious life. She's written about it in a column for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. And then Wesley Smith will join us. We'll get his response to a St. Louis Post-Dispatch editorial about President Obama's decision to allow federal funding of embryonic stem cell research. The editorial says that now science can really move forward with the money freed up by President Obama's decision. We'll see what Wesley has to say about that in about 20 minutes here on Issues Etc. Our call in number 1-877-672-3693, 877-623-MYIE, or talk back at issuesetc.org. Back to our interview with Terry Mattingly of Scripps Howard News Service. There was a film that came out several years ago. I think it was called it might have been called like 25th Hour or something like that, about a guy who was about to go to prison. He was a bad, bad guy, and he wanted to reconcile with his father before he was sent off to prison, essentially for good. And he had about a day to do it. And there's a scene where he's looking in the mirror, finally coming to grips with himself, talking about his life. The director has a series of images flashing while he's doing this long monologue. And it ends with a picture of a crucifix. And the character looking in this mirror says, "And you," referenced Jesus, "got off easy." And I thought to myself, this guy gets sin. This guy gets how dark sin can be. And I walked away from that film saying, I don't think a Christian director or writer could have communicated that in that way. They would have never communicated it that way. It would have been verboten to them.
Yeah, well, the other thing, M. Night Shyamalan, you know, has some very interesting religious material. And because of his Catholic background, his Catholic school background, although, you know, most people say he's a Hindu believer, although there are rumors that he's not. But are you familiar with his Alien movie?
Oh, yeah.
Of course.
Yeah.
Right. What's the last scene in that?
It's the Episcopal priest puts his collar back on.
And leaves. And as he goes, he walks out of the restroom, right, and he closes the door behind him. Did you pay close attention to the door?
No.
It's an Amish door. And so the last lines of the movie is, "Dad, do you think somebody saved me?" And the little and then the father says, "Yes, yes, baby, I think somebody did." Those are the last lines. "Did somebody save me?" "Yes, baby, I think somebody did." And then the last image you see is him walking out of the room after returning to the ministry. And the last shot is of the door. Now focus on the door, because Shyamalan fades the image from the corners. And it's a variation on the Amish door. And the last image on the screen is a large backlit cross, because it's an Amish door, right? With the four panels that form the shape of the cross?
Yes. Amazing.
Yeah, yes, Daddy, do you think somebody saved me? Yes, baby, I think somebody did. And the last image on the screen as this minister walks out of the room is a large cross. It's very explicit that that's what Shyamalan wanted the last image to be, because he fades to black for the credits from the corners. So the cross, the door with the cross on it is left as the only image in the middle of the screen.
Well,
now, once again, this could not be unintentional.
Speaking of ministers, you remember recently a healer to healers, as you call him, Lewis McBurney. Who is this man?
This is a wonderful evangelical man who took a huge risk in the late 70s. He walks away from his practice at the Mayo Clinic, and he decides to go off to the western side of Colorado, on the back side of the peaks that form around Aspen, the Maroon Bells, one of the most beautiful and most remote parts of Colorado, buys some land and puts up a lodge and begins by word of mouth to begin working with ministers, overwhelmingly evangelical pastors, and their wives whose lives have crashed, usually due to sexual infidelity. Although he said he only worked with two or three cases, they thought sexual infidelity was the actual problem. He said that's the symptom that makes people realize they have a problem. And for many, many years, he didn't even announce where it was. At the time that I went, and I found out after I shipped my column that one other reporter had visited there before. It was Russ Chandler of the Los Angeles Times, on a similar secret, we couldn't tell where we were going basis, got to visit this facility, and in my case, got to meet quite a few of the people who were there undergoing therapy, I mean, psychiatric treatment. And in most cases, their churches didn't know where they were. I mean, they literally had just kind of gone away. Like, we're going to Colorado for a couple of days. See ya. It was an amazing man who went very prophetic, very ahead of his time. And most of all, you had to understand that at the time he began his ministry, most conservative Christians just didn't want to admit that mental illness was real, let alone mental illness with pastors, right? This kind of brokenness existed. You were just supposed to deny all that and, you know, say your prayers and you'd be okay. And it's a lot bigger than that. So to make a long story short, when I heard of Lewis McBurney's death, I decided to write this tribute column because I had such strong memories, you know, of going out there and the week I spent in his facility.
And just briefly, the kind of things over his life that he dealt with these ministers who were undergoing their own personal pain, what kind of things are they?
Well, I mean, I mentioned that in the column. To make a long story short, pastors live, and I'm a pastor's son myself, pastors live in glass houses, and there's just things that go on in their lives and in their families' lives that other people get to deal with kind of in private and with some sense of discretion that an entire community thinks they own the pastor and they're supposed to know about that. So you've got that. You have workaholism, and not only is it workaholism, it's workaholism because you think God basically can't get along without you. You know, in other words, God wants me to be a workaholic. I'm called to be a workaholic. And how do you argue against that? Another syndrome that McBurney used to talk about is, and I didn't get this one into the column because I didn't have room, was the who took away my cookies syndrome, which is, obviously, if I'm doing God's work, I will be successful, which means my church will grow because God gives cookies to good people, right? I mean, God will reward my efforts. But what happens if you're in one of the 90 churches in America that's plateaued or shrinking in the current atmosphere? How do you feel about God? How do you feel about your own ministry? You see what I'm saying? So to some degree, ministers are pretty have jobs. I mean, they have callings, they have ministries, but to some degree, they also have jobs, and we often forget that, and we forget that they have work patterns that they struggle with and side effects of their work, just like, you know, any other executive would. I always felt very strongly about this subject, but not for the reasons that some people might suggest. My father was an example of someone who lived a very healthy life in the ministry and wasn't a workaholic and found ways to let off steam that were healthy. And, you know, and when I got to college and realized that I had had hours and hours and hours of time with my dad, primarily on a golf course, and I met all these other pastors' kids who never saw their dads, never, you know, unless they were kind of being paraded at some sort of church function. So anyway, a lot of that made this subject very personal to me, and I decided I wanted to do this salute to Lewis McBurney.
Terry Mattingly is director of the Washington Journalism Center at the Council for Christian Colleges and Universities. He's author of the book Pop Goes Religion, and he writes a weekly column on religion for the Scripps Howard News Service. Terry, thanks.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
You can read Terry Mattingly's On Religion column at issuesetc.org. Just go to our on-demand page where we keep the links and the on-demand audio. When we come back, Colleen Carroll Campbell will be our guest. She's a St. Louis-based fellow for the Ethics and Public Policy Center, author of the book The New Faithful, and she writes a weekly column for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, and she's written about that new survey on American religious life. Then Wesley Smith will join us. He's capping off it might even turn into more than just a couple of days, but a full week of conversation on President Obama's decision to allow federal funding for embryonic stem cell research. We've heard from Robert George, from Richard Hurlbut. We have heard from Gilbert Mailander, those three members of the President's Council on Bioethics. None of them pleased with the President's announcement. Wesley Smith will join us to talk about and react to that St. Louis Post-Dispatch editorial saying, now science can really move forward. Our Issues Etc. book of the month for the month of March is the Lutheran Study Bible. You can find out what it's all about by going to our website, issuesetc.org. You'll find a cover of the book right there at our homepage. It's full of notes and charts and maps from a distinctly Reformation Lutheran perspective. You can also call Concordia Publishing House and pre-order the Lutheran Study Bible. Their toll-free number, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040. It's the Issues Etc. book of the month for March, the Lutheran Study Bible. Tomorrow on Issues Etc., sexting. Now, see, I text a lot because I have a teenage daughter, and it's one of the ways, in fact, sometimes even during the program, my daughter is texting me on my laptop, and I text her back. You know what these teenagers are doing now? They're sexting. It's sex and texting at the same time. Dr. Albert Mohler will join us to talk about this new survey on religious life tomorrow, and we'll talk about Scripture Alone with Pastor Stephen Parks. I'm Todd Wilkins. Stay tuned.
Back by popular demand, you're listening to Issues Etc.
Genesis, why is it first in the Bible?
Answers with Ken Ham, one of the authors of the book, War of the Worldviews.
At our seminars, I tell audiences that to learn the basics of Christianity, they have to start with the book of Genesis. But why? Well, if you're reading a murder mystery, do you start in the middle? Of course not. If you start at the beginning, you'll better understand the whole plot. I just can't believe the number of Christians who treat the Bible as a book that you start reading in the middle. Many never start at the beginning. And really, all of the New Testament is founded in the Old Testament, and all of the Old Testament is founded ultimately in Genesis chapters 1 to 11. I remember when I told a church that all our doctrines go back to Genesis, like marriage, sin, death, and so on, one lady came to me and said, "Well, I've been a Christian for 2 years, but nobody ever taught me about Genesis. Christianity was like beginning to watch a movie in the middle. Now I understand the plot. This is great." Yes, Genesis sets the foundation for the rest of Scripture.
Genesis can also shed much light on many of the pressing social issues of the day, like abortion, racism, and so-called gay marriage. Those topics are looked at in a fascinating book co-authored by Ken Ham, War of the Worldviews. As we start to close off the week, offer us a donation of any amount to our ministry, and we'll send the book to you. Call 24 hours a day, 1-888-89-ANSWERS, 888-89-ANSWERS, or on the web, answersoffer.org.
You'll find a clearinghouse of Reformation resources at newreformationpress.com. T-shirts, music, outlines of important theological books, plus lectures by Issues Etc. regular guest, Dr. Rod Rosenblatt. Check it out, newreformationpress.com. If you like Reformation theology, you'll love New Reformation Press. www.newreformationpress.com.